Welcome to Shelf Care, the monthly bookish episode hosted by your favourite literature podcast, Through the Pages.
While in our main episodes we chat about all things classic, in our Shelf Care episodes we share everything that we care about on our personal shelves.
Welcome to a new Shelf Care episode.
We're very happy to be back this month with our own personal shenanigans that go beyond the classics.
Yes, I'm super excited. We're discussing our Q1 reading wrap-up,
yes.
I guess we can call it.
How corporate of us.
Let's do a Q1 revision. But I just know that we've both had a very good first quarter of the year in terms of reading.
Yes.
I feel like we've both, like, hearing you talking about your own reading shenanigans, I feel like you've really, like, you're on a roll.
I'm on a roll.
You're
yes.
on a roll. And I feel like we've both found, like, our, I don't know what to call it. I feel like we found our books.
We found.
I don't know. I feel like every time I know what I want to read next, even if it's not like, oh, this is the best book I've ever read, I feel like I'm just always, like, inspired to know exactly I'm going to go for this one next.
Same. I think that is something that has definitely changed this year compared to last year, where I was sometimes scrambling to find books, and now I'm like, oh yeah, I know which one's kind of in the pipeline, and I'm going for that one. And exactly as you said, like, they don't have to be the best thing I've ever read, but they are fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like one thing that we have to say is also that we've both been working to really minimize our screen time.
Yes.
I've deleted TikTok, I've deleted Instagram, only to log in sporadically into our own Through the Pages account. I still have YouTube, and that is still my sort of, like, I will sometimes go for that, but I think my screen time has gone down like 50%.
Yeah, I have checked also this week, and for the past 2 weeks, my screen time has been below 2 hours a day.
Which is amazing.
Which is, like, when I saw that number, I was like, oh.
You're like, oh.
Amazing.
And also considering that it will count, like, probably audiobook listening and...
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
It doesn't, okay. Which I thought was strange, because otherwise it would be
it would
the
true.
Roof.
It would be way higher, that is true.
But that, I thought that was quite interesting, because my most used app is WhatsApp.
Definitely.
Apparently I spend, like, hours on WhatsApp.
Talking to everyone, aka just to you.
Yeah,
I will only be texting you.
Because you're the only person I, like, regularly text. Same. And then maybe some other friends as well, and my mom.
Yeah.
But that, I feel like, wouldn't amount to, like, even an hour per day. But apparently it does.
It does. WhatsApp's also my one number one app. Don't forget that we do send quite a lot of voice notes and voice messages.
Our own personal podcasts
to
each other.
That is private, and there will be sometimes like 15 minute long ones.
Yeah.
So,
fair.
I mean, I guess that feeds into that as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like the whole thing of, like, I actively try to rewire my brain to be like, okay, every time I want to naturally take my phone into my hands and just scroll without doing anything, like, oh, I want to write to this person, I'm going to check something specific, or, like, maybe quickly checking the news, like, I will actively try to put away my phone, even though it does sometimes feel very cold turkey-esque, and will take a book on my Kindle into my hands.
Yeah, same. It's just, I just take, if I sit on the sofa instead of scrolling, I just take my Kindle and I read. And I do notice that it has made a massive difference to my overall attention span and to my immersibility into a book, which I'm very happy about, because I feel like that was something last year that I was definitely missing, is the way I was able to immerse myself in a book. I had it with, like, my, I think my 5-star reads, but now I even managed to be fully immersed in, like, a 3-star book, because while I'm there, I'm in that world, and it doesn't have to be groundbreaking, but it's fun.
But it's still fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Also in terms of, like the your attention span of just not having these quick little snippets, but really sitting and...
Not having the little music and, like, TikTok audios in your head that you keep repeating to yourself.
In a weird, chaotic, like, fever dream. And I feel like what I've also, like, or I'm teaching or trying to teach myself is that I don't have to... it doesn't have to be like a whole routine of like I'm sitting down and then I have to read for 2 hours, but it can also just be like 20 minutes in between, yeah. like, or over lunch if I've eaten and I have a couple more minutes, like I will read just like a couple of pages here and there, and I feel like that makes a big difference as well.
Definitely, yeah, I agree.
And I have it now. I mean, I've always missed reading if I haven't had the time to read it, to read in general, if like mm-hmm. I don't know, life was very busy or I just haven't had time or during traveling. But I feel like now I really have this sort of like, oh, I haven't had any time to read today because, yeah. I don't know, in the morning, didn't have time. Then, I don't know, I had like a social event. Yeah. Who am I? Like, I had something going on after work. And then I'm like, oh, but I haven't been able to read. Yeah. You know, it feels very like uncomfortable almost. Yeah. So yeah, long story short.
We love reading.
We like reading if yes. you hadn't gathered yet from us having a book podcast. Let's delve into
yes.
our books of...
So I think we'll go through kind of a few different topics. I yep. would say favorites, mm-hmm. disappointments, new discoveries, and just kind of honorable mentions.
Mm-hmm.
Unhonorable or honorable, up to us.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm going to start with my... I always give them the stars on Goodreads. I'm just going to go with my 2 5-star reads of the year,
yeah.
which have been 2 so far, mm-hmm. which I guess is quite good going, but it took me, I read both of them back to back. So it has taken, okay. and I've read them both now at the end of March, so it has taken me 3 months to find a 5-star book. Everywhere else, I think I was more between like 3 and 4 stars.
Mm-hmm.
More so 3, I think, than 4. But I read a very short novella, I would say. I think it's about 60 pages long.
Yeah.
And it's called The English Understand Wool. Mm-hmm. And I didn't obviously write down the name of the author, but I don't think there is, as I always forget. But I don't think there is another book called that by someone else.
It's so a very specific
you'll
title.
Find
is it wool as in like a woolen wool coat?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And it's a very... It was a very interesting book because I felt like in 60 pages, you felt like you had read like a 300-page book.
Oh, wow.
Because it just kind of drew you in. It felt a lot longer, but not in the way of like, oh, it dragged. It felt longer because of the richness of the world that you were kind of put into. So it basically starts out with the voice of a woman that is kind of telling about her childhood and her growing up with her mom, who was who is a very textile savvy woman.
Mm-hmm.
They used to like travel around the world to source certain materials, different silks, different wools, different things. That's also, mm-hmm. I think, why it's called, because at some point the mom says, oh, the English understand wool in terms of how to work it and
yeah.
stuff. So you kind of read this from the point of view of this girl at that point that is like talking about her childhood, and she is like in her late teens, mm-hmm. Now. And you kind of don't get where exactly you're going with all of this. I think it's written also, I quite enjoyed the voice of the girl. And then you read a few pages or like small chapters of this girl, and then suddenly you read the letter of an editor who is writing to her, talking about how she needs to put like more emotion into her manuscript, like what she's writing before they can publish. It needs to have a lot more backstory. She's just kind of listing facts. So you start to realize that what you've just read is something that somebody's writing to be published in a book.
Okay.
So it's kind of like this whole meta thing, story within a story.
I enjoy that.
We love. And then she's like, oh yeah, so you need to have a lot more build up until the incident. So you also like know, oh, something
is going to be happening.
Is going to or has happened to this girl, and she's now writing about it. And that kind of then propels the story forward. And I just thought it was so rich in so few pages and highly entertaining. I could see this being like a film even made out of, because of how it kind of your brain just fills in certain gaps that maybe weren't told, but you just kind of elaborate the story further yourself. And I just thought it was very interesting, took me very off guard because I didn't expect much of it, but it was very good.
That sounds so fun. Also
yeah.
the fact that it's only like 60 pages
exactly.
long.
Yeah.
And I mean, if there's something we love, it is a short read.
It's a short read. And also, if you read it and you don't like love it as much, you haven't wasted any time because you've read
yeah.
it in like an hour or two. So it's very like, it's just a fun thing to read in between. And I thought the concept was very interesting. And then my second one, mm-hmm. that at first, because of my snobby self, I voted as 4 stars because I was like, I can't give 5 stars to a romance book.
I even saw this. I was like, yeah. Oh, I thought you'd already read this. And then I saw it's suddenly 5 stars. I was like, I feel like you changed this.
I was like, and then I had to like check myself. And I was like, a romance book can be a 5-star book.
Yes.
I have to get off my high horse because I'm very much not a romance reader. Mm-hmm. I think the last romance book I read was when I was maybe 13 or 14. It was P.S. I Love You. So that was like a good...
Which is a little heart-wrenching.
The worst.
That
the
book
worst.
Destroys
Still
everything.
Makes me cry if I think about it. So that was like almost 16 years ago that I've read my last romance book.
Mm-hmm.
And then a friend of mine who also actually got me onto another one that I will mention later on... they like suggested a romance book to me, The Flatshare, which was also super entertaining. And then I just kind of wasn't, I realized that a romance book is nothing else but just a rom-com in a book. And I am partial to a good rom-com. As long as they're not like too spicy, smutty and stuff, not really into that. And
you
then
mean
I,
like the chili levels
needs
to be like a max one.
Yeah, and then I read... Book Lovers by Emily Henry, and I don't know why and what it was. It just hit every single spot I wanted it to hit. There was one sex scene that was a bit too intense for me, and then I just kind of skimmed over it. I was like, I don't need to be reading about these things.
I love how you censored yourself. You were like, oh, let me just, how distasteful. I'm just going to,
skim over it. And it was just fun. It was like a quite self-aware, like romantic comedy that was self-aware of its tropes and of things it had to do with the book industry, small town, quite an easy love story as well, where there weren't like misunderstandings. If I hate something, it's a misunderstanding to bring the plot forward. Makes me livid.
It's like,
so,
just talk to each other and then it will be immediately resolved.
So there was none of like all of that stuff, and it was just entertaining, perfect. I read it in like one evening at home on the sofa with it, because I wanted to watch a rom-com, and then I started reading that, and then I just read that instead. Grand. 5 stars.
Perfect. I remember reading that also like 2 years ago, so I think I mentioned that to you, and I really enjoyed the whole... I haven't read anything of a different book of Emily Henry's.
No, me neither.
But I remember that I enjoyed Book Lovers because I think I was drawn to it because both characters are, I think, literary agents.
Yes,
I
think. The one is an editor and the other one's an agent.
And they both work in the book industry, so I was like, oh, that's a quite
I mean,
fun
I was
premise.
Sold from there.
It's like, what's not to love, and then there's a little, like, intricate love, like, thingy, and it's like a whole, I think, like, rivals or enemies to lovers.
Yeah.
Not to like.
There was just everything in there. It just read very easily.
Yeah.
The other characters around the two main characters were pleasant as well. Not, like, super flat, so you could actually care about them a bit as well. A+, 5 stars.
That sounds great.
Yes.
Shall I head over to my
Go
five
on.
Stars? Which I've now realised you describing yours are both super heavy. Which, like, I have to check myself why I have picked two really, like, thematically heavy books.
Oh, I'm intrigued now.
So, the first one is, if I can find it, is a book that I listened to, actually. And I had heard and read a lot about it and heard a lot of people, also authors being like, oh, in the whole 2023 wrap-up of, like, what was the best book you read this year? A lot of people said In Memoriam by Alice Wynn.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, but it was like, oh, it's a First World War story with a romance. So I was like, if there's something I don't need, beginning of the year, starting my year with like a war topic that I then also, like, I read the news. I don't have to also read it in my free time. But then I was just like, it had like loads of good ratings. And I feel like if a book on average has like a couple of thousands of reviews and it has a higher average than a 4-point star thing, usually it will be good.
Yeah, yeah.
From just experience. So I started reading it and I was blown away. It's a debut, which is crazy because her prose and the way that Alice Wynn writes is so beautiful. It's like the perfect book of the characters being so fleshed out and you really like... live with them and you dream with them and you worry with them and you really just like go along with them, mixed with a plot that is so well constructed and like with such good pacing. To me, that was like a perfect historical novel.
Oh, wow.
And I don't want to give too much away, but it's also, it features a gay romance in the First World War, you know, two friends that grow up together in boarding school, then go off to war when they're like 17. And then basically the whole psychological trauma that they take away from that, and the whole different, they're split up into different regiments, and you basically read the story from both perspectives, and it's just beautiful and heart-wrenching and really awful and brutal, but it's just like it left me with this whole thing of like, oh, I feel like I learned something.
Oh,
and it was so vividly described that I was just like, this is a perfect book.
Yeah. Oh, so, wow.
But yeah, again, it's like a heavy topic. Yeah, it's a heavy hitter. I was like, well, what does that say about me? And the second one is a memoir, which, if you might remember a whole reading wrap-up and reading intentions for this year, I was like, oh, I want to read more memoirs, which, happy to say, I have done. It's not like
an
empty promise. I read The Glass Castle by Jeanette Wells. Walls. And that was a book that has been on my TBR, like my physical TBR, for a really long time.
Okay.
And with my physical TBR, I've really started like telling myself, okay, like if I want a new book, like just go to the physical books you haven't read yet.
Yes.
Because they can just not be sitting around gathering dust for the next couple of years. So I started that because I always thought it was a very interesting premise. Basically, Jeanette Walls talks about her growing up. It's like a coming of age memoir of like her starting when she's like 6 years old and then moving into her adulthood, and her growing up with a crazy, crazy, crazy family of different siblings and two parents that definitely should never have had kids. Two parents that like they're always sort of living along the poverty line, growing up as sort of nomads, driving around in their car across the US, never staying somewhere longer than like half a year. And her growing up with this very nomadic life, and both parents are just wild and definitely have psychological problems and so on. And it's basically this whole story of like the siblings basically being the adults and forging a life for themselves. And she is then cast into a life as an adult that is like the complete opposite from this like very poor life into like the Manhattan, I don't know, what do you call it, like East Side, you know, posh and so on. And she just describes it so well. And you really like sometimes hate her entire family, but then stuff will happen. She tells it in such a like nuanced way that you can never say, oh, I hate these adults. But it's just this thing of like every time you go into that direction, she changes it and you're like, yeah, but there's still love around, you know?
Yeah.
It's a very, I don't know, it really took me along like on a wild ride, and is definitely one of the best memoirs I've ever read. If you know Educated by Tara Westover, which I also really loved, it sort of went in a similar direction, not from the whole like cult perspective, but from the way that they grew up, I feel like. And that was already a 5-star read years ago that I read. So I really enjoyed this. This is one of the best memoirs I've ever read.
Oh, wow. Interesting. How did you learn of it? Because I've never heard her name before.
I think it was also like an author that once recommended it in terms of like what's the best like life story you've read, and they said the Glass House.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, that's fun. And then I think I bought it like years ago.
Yeah.
And it's just been sitting on my shelf.
Physical TBR. So if you hear some background noises in the near future, a cat has joined us in the recording room. So that'll be him. So we talked about our top ones. Now let's go the other way.
The other way.
I have written down not even like the ones that I didn't enjoy that much. I've written down the ones that I've like properly DNF'd.
Okay.
Which is something that I have started doing, full stop.
Which
and
is great.
Has been revolutionary, because I would always force myself to finish a book even if it wasn't great, and this year I just thought, no, there is too many books out there to be read. If I'm not into it, I don't even give myself like a certain percentage that I need to read. I'm just, if I'm not into it, I'm just not into it.
Yeah, I think that's so good because like you wouldn't, I always compare it to like watching a film, like you wouldn't be watching a film that you don't enjoy just for the sake of finishing
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
I feel like we usually read in our free time, so why would we spend our free time doing something that we don't want?
Exactly. Right? So what I have DNF'd was The 10,000 Doors of January by Alex Harrow.
Okay.
Which was, started out very fun. I also like Alex Harrow's other work. I think I've read her like fairy tale retellings,
oh.
lol, speaking of. And I really enjoy her writing style, but the story just didn't go anywhere. I just
okay.
wasn't into it. I just didn't get it. And then I think I DNF'd it like 30%. I just thought, no, I just won't revisit this story again.
Interesting, because I just checked it now, but I started reading her newest book, Starling House.
Oh, yeah.
Last year, and I DNF'd that too.
Interesting,
like,
yeah.
I think also at the like 25% mark, because there was just something about it, like I didn't...
Yeah, just a bit. I don't know if it's too long or it was just kind of too convoluted. I didn't have any connection to the main characters and I think I also kind of read it and then stopped, and then when I picked it up again, even maybe after like 1 or 2 days, I had to like reread previous chapter because I couldn't remember a thing. So then I knew, okay, I'm just, I can say goodbye to that one.
If it feels like an effort, I feel
exactly.
like that's how I
yes.
decide to stop reading a book. The cat has spoken.
yes.
It's usually that thing of like, it feels like an effort to read
yeah,
it.
And that's not what I'm here for.
No,
yeah.
I feel like you can give a book some time or like a second chance
mm-hmm.
and be like, okay, maybe I just need to get past these like first 10% of the book and then I'll get into it. But if it then never happens,
just,
I feel like it's a sign.
Yeah. And then I also DNF'd Into the Drowning Deep, that I can't remember who it's by now, because again, I didn't write down the author's name. But that was basically also, again, a premise that sounded really fun of a movie production house that creates, like, fake documentaries. And they were out there filming a fake documentary about supposed mermaids that lived like in the middle of the sea or something. And then the whole crew goes missing and just some of the footage shows up. The show's like super real special effects. And like, oh my God, how were they able to edit that footage on the boat? Like, how strange.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's at the beginning told from the point of view of, I think it was the sister of one of the crew members that went missing, and basically trying to figure out what happened, be it for like insurance purposes
mm-hmm.
of why were they in like danger in the middle of the sea filming a mockumentary. And then the question of like, were they special effects or was it actual like mermaids that basically brutally murdered all of these crew members?
Out of all the things that could have murdered them, mermaids.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know. And again, the premise sounded super fun, but it was, I think, I don't know, I just also couldn't get into it. I wasn't into the, like, I don't know, everything, like the atmosphere of
mm-hmm.
surrounding it with this, like, very modern mockumentary, like, film production company. It just wasn't, I just couldn't vibe with it. And I was like, no,
that's
again,
fine.
Yeah. I think if in books, I've realized that also in past books, if there is too many mentions of social media
yeah.
in books, I'm immediately not into it. And it's, I had that last year with a book that I did fight through though, so that's why now I've learned from my past mistakes and just DNSing things. That was the Bad Herons, Bad Club. I can't even remember what it's called.
No,
you know
Bad Heroines.
Yeah, Bad Heroines.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was technically, again, a super fun premise. Would have been also very fun if they had just focused on the past storyline, because the present storyline was all about influences and Instagram and stuff. And if I just hear too many times the word Instagram on the page, I lose interest.
I feel like authors sometimes do that to make the book more timely.
Yeah.
Or like to make a connection to today's topics. And
yeah. And I feel like
problems.
It dates it way more.
Yeah.
Because you can then tell based even on either certain terms that are being used or certain emojis that they say are being used, you just know, oh, that's been written like in that time. So for me, it just takes me out of the story, DNF. And then another one that I started listening to was called Brutes by Diz Tate. And it was kind of marketed as a mix of The Virgin Suicides and Bunny. And I haven't read Bunny. I've read The Virgin Suicides. Freaking love that book so much. And then I thought, ooh, that sounds interesting. But it was way too much, like, no plot, just vibes. Mm. But to the point where I physically didn't understand what was happening. Like, I didn't know what was going on.
That's a good reason to ditch a book.
Yeah, and then I was like, you know what? It's like, it was very nicely written, but I have no clue what's going on. I know that there is a girl missing, but
that's it.
That's it.
If that's the only plot point you have, that's probably a reason why not to.
So that was also a DNF from my side.
Interesting. I find it super good that you've started ditching books. Because, I feel like, giving a book a little bit of credit and some time to evolve and to click with it, definitely, because I have had it that, like, I've started books and I was like, it feels like I'm wading through water and I'm just not getting anywhere. And then suddenly, like, it got me after, like, I don't know, page 80 or so.
Yeah.
And if I had stopped beforehand, like, I wouldn't have gotten to that point and wouldn't have enjoyed the book, ultimately. But I feel like there's just different factors to get that play together where you're like, I don't have to force myself to do this.
No.
I have a book that I wish I had DNF'd, but because it was so short, I think me, it also...
The length. Yes.
Because if a book is only about like 200 pages long and I read up to the 80 page mark, I'm like, well, what's another 120? If a book has 500 pages, I'm like, no way. I'm only 1/5 in. No way I'm doing all of this. But this book was about 150 pages. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And it's Tokyo Express by Seicho Matsumoto. Mm-hmm. Very sorry if I'm butchering this name. And it was marketed. It's a book that was published in the 1950s. And I think Penguin released it as one of the classics editions. And I've seen it before and I was like, oh, this sounds very interesting. And it's basically marketed as the Japanese Agatha Christie.
Mm, which sounds so good.
Which is also like her contemporary, right? Mm-hmm. It's also in the 50s. So I was like, oh, this sounds super duper interesting and it's only 150 pages. Let's do it. Shouldn't have done it. I don't even know. I gave it 2 stars because I gave it not just 1, because 2 for like...
The 2 for effort.
2 for effort, 2 for, like, the craft, I guess. But the premise was quite fun. It's basically on a beach, a man and a woman are found in an apparent couple suicide. And then there's one investigator that is like, I don't think that's a couple suicide. I think there's some foul play involved. So I was like, yeah, that sounds like a good thing. The problem is just that already... Almost halfway through the book, you know who the murderer is, the murderer. You know who it is.
Like, do you know officially or did you know?
No, you know officially. Okay, because basically, it's very much like the book is very focused on the craft of the investigation and how the investigator moves forward and checks the different alibis and so on. Which I feel like we all know and happens in murder mysteries, but not to that like degree of detail.
Mm-hmm.
And the important, like, one huge part of it is, that's why it's called Tokyo Express, is the murder is connected to different train connections and how the murderer would have been able to commit the crime based on an alibi where he was somewhere else, but could he have done it if he had taken specific train connections?
Okay.
So you learn a lot about the Japanese railway system, which I find super fun, just not on, like, 60 pages of a murder mystery.
Yeah.
So there's lots of like, if he had taken the 11:55 from Tokyo and had arrived in, I don't know, Osaka at like exactly that time with this express, it's just basically a timetable for trains.
Yeah.
And it just like at one point, like it had just lost me completely because I was just interested in the murder story of it and why exactly he had done it. And it was way more, it was a very technical murder mystery.
Which sounds boring.
It was very boring, ultimately. And that was quite disappointing.
Yeah, I get that.
Another one that was not fully disappointing, but that definitely didn't... I think it was just because I had such high expectations. It's What Feasts at Night by T. Kingfisher.
Mm.
It's the second novella in the Sworn Soldier series.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I mentioned it during our 2023 recap that I really enjoyed the first book, which was... What Moves at Night?
In the Dark at Night, yeah, no.
No, What Moves in the Dark, okay. And then What Feasts at Night. Okay. I always mix the two up. That was great because it was the retelling of The Fall of the House of Usher.
Yes.
And now What Feasts at Night, I had it like pre-ordered super early on, and it was not bad. It just fell short compared to the first one. It didn't have the same... It left me a bit like... Like, there's some horror elements in it, similar to the first book, but it was just not as tangible as the first one. I think you read it.
Yeah, I haven't read the second one. I've read the first one.
Oh, yeah,
because
I think I ruined it for you.
Yeah, no, because I think you mentioned you read and you were like, wasn't sure about that. I was like, okay, it like dropped down on my TBR like quite a lot.
The priority list like went way down. And there is also a horror element this time, more of a supernatural element, because there's a... basically a figure that appears to you in your sleep. And the main character and his companion sort of have to deal with that. But it just fell a bit short and it felt very rushed towards the end.
Okay.
So again, I feel like oftentimes, for me, books don't hit the spot because the pacing is off.
Yes, yes. I think we talked about that with a few things where it's just, I can't even fully grasp what it is, but it's just too much of like, an ebb and flow, and then suddenly everything happens, and so many pages nothing happens.
Yeah,
it's just
where you're just like, it's not keeping me.
Yeah,
like it's not keeping me there. You know,
yes.
It's that very strange sort of. If I'm reading it or not reading it, sort of the result will be the same thing.
Yeah,
and that's not what it should
be.
That's
a shame.
Yeah.
So, and now the next point before our honourable, unhonourable mentions at the end is new discoveries or just somebody that we have enjoyed. And I, thanks to my friend who also suggested I read The Flatshare, we kind of talked about in length about our shared love for murder mysteries and anything whodunit related. And then she was like, oh, you really need to read Magpie Murders by Anthony Horowitz because there is also a BBC series attached to it, so you can read it and then watch it and stuff. And that was just great. I freaking loved it. It was so good. It was so entertaining. And that just kind of drew me into Anthony Horowitz's rabbit hole. And I think I then also read The Moonflower Murders, which is the second one in the Magpie Murder duo mystery thing, and then two of his other ones where he basically kind of puts himself into a book as a Watson-esque character, where he works together with kind of a shunned detective who he has to write a book about, and about a case, because he approaches him, he's like, oh hey, do you want to write books about cases that I solve? And then Horowitz, in like the kind of fictionalized version of himself, takes on a role as kind of a Watson role.
That is super fun.
It's again like a fun twist on a murder mystery. I mean, I also know you're reading Magpie Murders currently, and it's also again story within a story linked to the publishing industry. I mean,
what's not to love?
Just so good, very entertaining. I also quite enjoy the way he writes because they're very... the characters feel quite real. Nobody is perfect. Everyone is a bit like everyone. Just it just feels like you're reading about normal people.
Yeah,
which is as normal as you can get in a whodunit. But nobody is an extreme version of themselves. Everyone's just kind of living their lives, and then
something bad happens.
Murder occurs. Yes. And yeah, so I would say he and his whole bibliography are kind of on my radar now. So I think I'm going to like put him into every lit. I read like maybe a book of his a month because he has also written lots. Yes.
I mean, I remember you talking to me like a couple of weeks ago about your whole murder mystery, like rekindled love for murder mysteries.
Yeah.
And the moment you started talking about it, I was like, my flame has ignited again, because I feel like we've both always loved, like, Agatha Christie, whodunits, etc. And I mean, after my rather disappointing encounter with Tokyo Express and that murder mystery, I was like, I need something that is captivating, that leaves me, like, guessing, that is fun. And I feel like, yeah, currently reading Magpie Murders, really enjoying it. Gonna go home and read it this afternoon.
Love it. Yeah.
It's just very, very fun. And I love the whole, like, twists on the pattern that mm-hmm. is murder mysteries, because I feel like so often it follows the same, you know, Agatha Christie pattern of an incident occurs, there's a group of people in a close environment, one of them is the murderer. And I feel like that is such a good pattern
mm-hmm.
And sort of a blueprint, I guess.
Yes.
But if, like, nowadays you can do a twist on it, I find that super fun and refreshing, because it plays what you already know, but gives you that fresh sort of, like, je ne sais quoi.
Yes, couldn't have put it better, yes.
Yeah.
It's a great genre, just always works.
Yeah.
It works as a beach read, it works reading when it's rainy outside, it works reading during Christmas time. It's just
a good one.
It's just a good one. Freaking love that genre.
Yeah, and I'm now on a roll as well. I
love
will
it.
Finish Magpie Murders. We'll definitely read the second one too.
Yes.
I feel like it's definitely one, or a genre that always gets me out of a reading slump if I do have one.
100%.
Luckily, haven't had one yet this year.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's just always one that really gets you into reading again, because it follows that blueprint. It's something you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it has good plot, it has fun characters, it's just, there's rarely one, apart from the one I just discussed, that leaves me disappointed.
Nice.
Yeah.
What about you?
I don't have a new discovery, but I have a new, older discovery. Because last year, and I think that was among my 5-star reads of last year, mm-hmm. was The Dance Tree by Kieran Millwood Hargrave. That was set, it's always historical fiction, and that was set in Strasbourg in the 17th century, I think, or 16th century. And I had her previous novel on my radar for quite a while, because I so enjoyed mm-hmm. that newer book. And it's called The Mercies. And it's set around the Norwegian witch trial in the 17th century in Vardo. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Who knows? And it's basically the most northern point of Norway. So, in the middle of nowhere,
yeah.
It's basically Antarctica, and she fictionalizes that witch trial and that community of women mm-hmm. that live there, because a couple of years before that witch trial, it's based on real events, obviously fictionalized,
yeah.
and she gives these different characters. I then did some research, which I really love, if there's historical fiction and you know it's based on some true stories, and then you can Google mm-hmm. and sort of find out, this name that she used is actually, like, that woman, and then she just gave them a fictionalized backstory to really enhance,
mm-hmm.
you know, what happened. And basically, what happened 2 years before that actual witch trial, which I think was in 1621, is that during a huge storm, basically all of the male population of fishermen in that place in Vardo died, leaving the women to fend for themselves, who then built their own community.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, much to the distaste of every, I don't know, male person in power in the region, like, they became their very independent, like, community of doing the men's jobs.
Mm.
And then the story starts with them sort of bringing in, like, a magistrate to sort of bring back order and peace and civilization to these women who have gone rogue by looking after themselves. How could they?
Thriving, probably.
Yeah, thriving.
Yeah.
And it's really this whole thing of, like, she puts a huge feminist twist on it, and it's told out of the perspectives of two women, one woman who lives in Vardo and one who is the magistrate's wife.
Oh, interesting.
And their friendship. And I didn't give it 5 stars because it didn't keep me as captivated as the previous book that
mm-hmm.
I'd read. But I just love, like, historical fiction in that way, that it's based on something that I know is true, and then that she builds a story around it. And she writes beautifully. It's
nice.
Just like that thing where I'm like, how where did you get that sentence from?
The craft.
Yeah, the craft.
Yeah.
And like, every once in a while, like, I love a good murder mystery, like a good historical fiction. I'm just like, tell me a story.
Love it. Love it.
So yeah,
yeah,
that was very fun.
Nice. Awesome. And
Let's come to some honourable mentions.
I'm going to jump into my honourable mention that was Poor Things by Alistair Gray. I wanted to watch the film after like the whole kind of Oscar because it was so amazing, blah blah. And then I thought, oh, I'm gonna read the book first, also because it's not that long. Generally, like my overall kind of comment on it would just be boring. It was very boring. I would say the first maybe like not even first third. I would say the first quarter was interesting from like the concept point of view, the whole like Frankenstein-esque aspect of the creation of this woman, Bella Baxter, at the hands of Godwin Baxter, at the hands of Godwin Baxter, that then also coincidentally is always referred to as God, because
it's like the whole Pygmalion thing,
and it was also it's also kind of a story within a story narrative, because at the beginning you read an introduction that says that Alistair Gray is the editor of the book, and the book is written by Sir Mr. McCandless, who is then actually a character in the novel. So it was kind of like an interesting setup. Then you have this whole, I mean, again, I'm not going to go into this because this would become a huge discussion about the whole kind of topic that it is about, with this woman that has been kind of regenerated with a child's brain in a full-grown woman's body and blah, blah, blah. I know it's like satire and everything. I think it was very difficult to read it in a way that you knew that it was satire, but you still, while I was reading it, I still felt like I was doing something wrong. Felt just wrong. And then after the first quarter, it just became boring. It just became like a list of like footnotes and information that wasn't needed.
Sorry, side note. No novel should have a footnote.
Exactly.
My
thoughts exactly.
No.
And then the last chapter was interesting again because it was kind of like a plot twist.
Okay.
And otherwise it was just boring. It was very like underwhelming. Mm-hmm. And then I watched a film and I also didn't like that, but that's all different.
But it's
podcast.
Good that you managed to read the book before you watch the film. I feel like that's a good way to do it.
I mean, visually I feel like the film really encapsulated this like weirdness of the plot that was happening with this like Frankenstein-y thing. Everything is like a bit monstrous. It's very like steampunk, strange, dream world like. They also use a lot of like fish lens view and black and white things. So it's very like disorienting.
Like, I would get nauseous.
Probably, yeah. And so yeah, it was a bit disorienting, but the book, I feel like the source material was just rather a bit boring.
Good that they made an Oscar-winning film out of it, though.
Yeah, of course, because, And what I'm not going to go into it. What I didn't like about the film is that it took away the plot twist ending.
Oh, interesting. So the one good thing that kept it going.
Yeah, and I feel like the one thing that reinforces the whole this is a satire and criticism of society, men, and how they deal with things, and that wasn't in the film, and that really bothered me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Which surely should have been the one takeaway.
But apparently not.
Interesting. Anywho. Maybe that's why I won an Oscar.
Yeah. What about you?
I actually have an honourable mention, because when you started talking about your whole murder mystery shenanigans that you were starting, I was like, oh, I really want to read something as well, but not like Anthony Horowitz, which I've started now. I was like, I want something like very easygoing. So I had a book, I think it was suggested to me because I read something else, and it's called The Agathas by Kathleen Glasgow, and it's YA. It's a YA mystery. And then I realised, why do I not read more YA?
Love
am
it.
Am I actually silly? I mean, I moved from exclusively reading YA in my youth, dare I say.
When we were the Y of the A.
And now, now that I'm an A, I just... Sorry, I have a cat's head just staring at me. Yeah, hi. I sort of stopped reading YA, and if there's one good thing that goes together, it's YA and a murder mystery. The premise is great. It's two girls that go to the same high school. I think they're both 16 or 17. And then... another girl that is in their school, who is one of the main characters' good friend, she dies and she gets killed, and then they sort of start investigating it together. So it has all of the like sort of high school setting, but really also like big heavy themes. There's some like domestic violence and like family dynamic drama and so on. And I think the author did that really well, sort of adding that into a YA novel, but still giving it the credit it needs without making it too heavy, you know. And also like it was quite bloody at times, so I was like, oh, okay. Was it like that at our time, like 100 years ago? And that was really surprisingly fun. And there's a second one in the series that I might watch.
Oh,
I think
fun.
It's a duology.
Yeah.
And it's really fun because they also say like one of the main characters is obsessed with Agatha Christie, which is why it's called The Agathas.
Nice.
And she's like, oh, now we're sort of solving our own murder mystery and trying to bring credit to our dead friend. And that was just like, it was a good, fun read.
Yeah.
And I need to read, my main takeaway is I need to read more YA.
Yeah. And especially something that gives you the same feeling as watching Veronica Mars for the first time.
Yeah. Yes, that's why, because it was marketed as, Agatha Christie meets Veronica Mars. I mean,
which,
there's two things I love. It's Veronica Mars and it's Agatha Christie.
I mean, that sounds like a perfect mix.
Yeah.
I think I'll have to put that on my TBR as well, because it sounds really fun.
It was not a 5-star read, because I didn't take too much away from it, but it was just like fun to read. It was a quick one. It was still like really well plotted.
Mm-hmm.
The characters felt real. It was just a good read.
Good time.
A solid read.
I feel like this was a very good first quarter of the year.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this.
I hope we didn't jinx it by making this episode.
Like Q2, 3 and 4 are just going to be
bleak.
No, but I feel like we're on a good trajectory.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I've never had as many on my TBR list that I want to read from very different genres as well.
Yeah,
I feel like, the whole thing of like, I always know what I want to read next.
Yes.
And if I don't, I always have you to tell me what you're reading.
I mean,
and
it's
I'm
true.
Like,
it's, when I see that like you've updated something on your Goodreads, I'm always like, add to the list.
Like, oh, what's my best friend reading? Should I read it too?
Like
I feel like I'm always like the worst copycat, but I'm like, if I know you like something, like the possibility that I will not like it is incredibly small.
Exactly. Same. I mean, I feel like I accept recommendations from very few people,
and you are
one of them. Yeah,
I feel like if it has like a Mandy approved stamp, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna put that up on my priority
list. It's
gonna
be a good time. So let us know what you've read, how your reading year has been going, if you've found some 5-star reads, if you've read some great books, long books, short books,
disappointing books.
I think let us know. We would love to hear about your reading year so far. And we will hear you in the next Shelf Care episode next month.
Can't wait. Until then, take
care.
Bye.